Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. The topic is feminism. You don't have to look far to find feminists. Turn on the television, for heaven's sake. You don't have to look far to find the presuppositions behind the feminist movement. That is everywhere. It's in the workplace, it's in the home, it's on the media, of course, and it is, in a lot of ways, the atmosphere we breathe. It makes it difficult to analyze for that reason, but we have someone alongside this evening, continuing our conversation from the last hour, analyzing the feminist movement, and she's been doing it for a long time. In fact, before many people even saw it on the horizon or realized some of the dangers inherent in the feminist movement, Phyllis Schlafly was telling us to beware. We'll talk about feminism during this hour with Phyllis Schlafly, founder and president of Eagle Forum. She's also author and editor of 20 books, including her latest called Feminist Fantasies. If you'd like to join us with a question or a comment, our phone number, 1-800-730-2727, 1-800-730-2727. You can email us here in the studio at issuesetc@kfuo.org. issuesetc@kfuo.org. The best callers and emailers during this hour will receive a copy of Phyllis Schlafly's new book, Feminist Fantasies, 1-800-730-2727, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Let's go right to the phones. We'll talk with Keisha calling from Lawrence, Kansas. Keisha, thank you very much for waiting and welcome to Issues, Etc. What's your question or comment, Keisha?
I'm in a relationship, a marriage, and my husband is very abusive physically and verbally, emotionally. We've got three children. I'm an RN, and he does nuclear medicine. So we've got a great income. We've got a great house. I've got people around me telling me, I don't know if they're just being feminist, telling them, leave, take your kids and leave. Although I've read in the Bible a lot, it says that just, divorce isn't good, divorce isn't right, it's not good for the kids. I don't know what to do.
Now, that is an excellent question, Keisha, and I thank you for bringing it to us. I'll give Phyllis an opportunity to answer here, and then I'd like to follow up a bit just from a pastoral perspective. Phyllis, your response.
Yes, Todd, I'm sure you can give her much better advice than I can. I'm not a marriage counselor. I can understand if there is fault and it's an intolerable situation, you need to take some action. Whether it's possible to work it out, maybe you can get your husband and you go to some counselor and work with them. I sympathize with you. That's a really tough situation. I certainly don't think women should stay around and be beaten up if that's what the situation is.
And I would echo those sentiments precisely in saying this. First of all, what's taking place there is a crime, and that's important for everyone involved to understand. And there's no reason for a woman to stick around and be beaten. That is not to say you need to separate from your husband, if that is how far this has come, to protect yourself and your children, is not a feminist notion. I think it's a good common sense notion. It does not mean divorce. I would not counsel toward divorce because I believe that is inimical to what Scripture teaches about marriage. It's separation for the sake of ironing out this very serious problem, ending the abuse, and reconciling with your husband. Is that always a realistic prospect? Maybe not necessarily, but it is the first step to take, and that would be my counsel. If it has come to this point to protect yourself and your children, then you separate for the sake of ending the abuse and reconciling with your husband and rebuilding the marriage. Clay is calling from Philadelphia. Clay, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hi, how are you? Just a quick comment and a question. I really don't believe that there are that many true feminists out there, because in Philadelphia, whenever there's a big snow, my feminist sisters aren't out there helping me shovel. And when we go out to eat and the check comes, my feminist sisters aren't picking up the check. So I just like to, call on all my feminist sisters to stop being cheap and pick up a check.
Clay.
But a question, my question would be, seriously, couldn't you blame men for the feminist movement because men didn't love their wives like Christ loved the church? And I guess the second question would be, if it wasn't for the early feminist movement, do you think you would have gotten your right to vote before or after the African American?
Those are two good questions. And Clay, I'd like you to stay on the line if you could, because I'd like to send you a free copy of Phyllis's new book called Feminist Fantasies. Let's deal with the questions in the order that he gave them. First, with his comment, do feminists consistently live their agenda?
No. They're full of hypocrisies and double standards. And they claim they want equality, but they really want special preferential treatment. I can give you a good example of that in their fight to get women admitted to Virginia Military Institute, which is a very tough military school. It was an all-boys school for over a century. And they got their Supreme Court Justice, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, to hand down a Supreme Court decision saying they had to admit women. And they claimed they wanted to be called Brother Rat and treated like the men are treated, which is pretty tough. But as soon as they won that case, Janet Reno issued regulations saying, well, of course you'll have to modify your requirements and so you won't discourage women from entering. So they really didn't want the equality. They wanted it to be feminized. And I think men need to understand that. Then I believe the caller asked, aren't men to blame for some of these things? Well, sure, there are some men who are slobs. And we're sinners. Nobody ever says the Christians are perfect. But there are a lot of wonderful men who are working hard to support their families, and it's up to you all to pick a good one when you decide to get married. I do think, and in fairness to the men, that it is very difficult for them to fight women. If I can take a minute, I was waiting to be picked up for a speech one night, and I had on the television a wildlife program on one of the educational channels, and they had real pictures of bears. And the male bear is about 30% bigger than the female bear. He could beat her to a pulp. And they showed this female bear, and she staked out her fishing area where she could take care of her cubs. And then you saw this male bear approaching her, and they squared off just like boxers in the ring. It was the funniest thing to watch, and they kind of danced around and faced each other. And then pretty soon this great big male bear hung his head and turned around and walked away. And I deduce from that, it isn't natural for men to fight women. And the men find it very hard when these aggressive feminists go after them. And they just are just going to have to learn to stand up to them. And that's what I hope my book will help them do.
Now, the last question that Clay asked had to do with the vote. And had it not been for the feminist movement, do you think that women would have gotten the vote?
Yes. Very good question. The suffragette movement worked for a specific benefit for women. That is the benefit of being able to vote. And they were successful. There is no relation between that movement and the movement that started in the 70s as a result of Betty Friedan's book and the National Organization for Women. The suffragettes were very anti-abortion. They talked about abortion as killing your baby and how wrong it was. And so the feminists today would not accept them as part of their movement at all.
Our phone number, 1-800-730-2727, 1-800-730-2727. George is calling from New Orleans. George, welcome to Issues Etc.
Yeah, I would like to know, does the feminist movement tell their people not to read the Bible and not to go to worship services?
That's a good question. What about the feminist movement when it finds its way into the church? What kind of advice is given in those respects?
Well, if they're in the church, they're probably working to ordain women, and they really want to take over and run the church. They think we've had this oppressive, male-dominated hierarchy for a long time, and they want to get rid of it. Now, most of them, I think, are really kind of anti-religious. They look upon the Christian religion as oppressive to women, and this is such a lie. The Christian religion is wonderful for women. It has taught men to be good husbands and good fathers, and it's lifted women out of the kind of way they are treated in a lot of other religions. It's just dreadful. Well, look at the Muslims, the way they just a few months ago, some woman was convicted by a court and upheld by a higher court of having a child out of wedlock, and so she's convicted of being stoned to death. And it's a very gruesome procedure. They start with the small rocks so the death lasts longer. And in India, they used to solve their Social Security problem by having the widow throw herself on the funeral pyre after her husband dies. And that's the way they got rid of that. In America and in the Christian faith, women have been so wonderfully treated.
Phyllis Schlafly is our guest. We're talking about feminism. Her new book is called Feminist Fantasies. You can order it online at SpencePublishing.com. That's SpencePublishing.com. Or you can call them toll-free, 1-888-SPEN-PUB. That's 1-888-SPENPUB. When we come back, we'll take more of your phone calls, your questions, and your comments for Phyllis Schlafly on the subject of feminism. We'll also get to a few of the things we didn't get to in the last hour, namely women in combat. We'll talk about the glass ceiling and something that Phyllis mentioned in the last hour that I'd like her to expand upon, and that is the elitist nature of feminism. 1-800-730-2727 is our call-in number. We'll be right back.
A voice in the wilderness of American evangelicalism. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Martin Luther once called the doctrine of justification the doctrine by which the church stands or falls. What is the central nature of this teaching, and why is it so important? Here's Issues, Etc. regular guest, Dr. Lawrence White of Our Savior Lutheran Church in Houston, Texas.
Paul articulates for us more clearly than anywhere else in Scripture that great biblical doctrine of justification, that as the sinner stands before the righteous judge, he is declared to be not guilty because of that which Christ has done for us. When God the judge looks on us, he sees not our sins, not our failures and our flaws, but the pure white robe of Christ's righteousness. And we are declared to be justified, not guilty, because of that which Christ has done for us.
Issues, Etc., the radio voice of the Lutheran faith for the 21st century.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Phyllis Schlafly is our guest. We're talking about feminism. Our phone number, 1-800-730-2727, 1-800-730-2727. Calling from Wake Forest, North Carolina, and very patiently waiting on the line, Beverly, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hello. I have a comment. I hope that the Eagle Forum can do something about shows on the national TVs, ABC, etc., and they just seem to be glorifying these actresses and models in the most skimpiest clothes, and some of them, you know, have their bosom showing, and it just seems to me like every year it's getting a little bit closer to, you know, full frontal nudity. And then another thing I wanted to hear your views about the lesbian situation that has come up since in the last several years. So many of them that are getting married and then having babies with a sperm bank or whatever.
Beverly, those are two good questions. Thank you very much for the call. Regarding the media and the depiction of women, you would think after 30 years of feminism, Phyllis, we would not have to see Victoria's Secret's models running up and down the runway scantily clad, and you'd think there'd be an outcry from feminists on these kind of things.
No, the feminists, there are a few feminists who are against this pornography, but most of them are not. And I think probably one reason is that they get some of their funding from the pornographers. I know when we fought the Equal Rights Amendment, in Illinois from 1972 to 1982, they were getting funding from Playboy magazine. And I want to thank the Lutheran Missouri Synod for the help you gave us in that 10-year battle, which was very successful. You were always supportive because you recognized that the Equal Rights Amendment was an attack on the God-directed roles of men and women, on marriage, on the family, and it was bad for everybody. And so you will find only an occasional feminist who speaks out against pornography. Most of them do not.
I've spoken with other of those who critique women, who critique the feminist movement, and they've also suggested that, in a sense, the feminists have painted themselves into a corner. They've talked about empowering women and pushed the sexual revolution, and the natural outcome has been not only the sexualization of women in the media, but also the sexualization of young girls, and they don't see a way out. It's consistent with their view of women's empowerment.
Well, they think if men have been promiscuous, then the way to be equal is for women to be just as promiscuous, too. And the women get hurt much more on that. And then another one of their fantasies is they tell women, you don't have a biological clock. And now you find very bitter statements of a lot of them who, after they pass 40, find they can't have a baby. They've passed up that part of their life.
Beverly also asked about the lesbian angle and whether or not what we've been seeing, prominent famous lesbians seeking to adopt or seeking to have children by other means, has anything to do with the feminist movement.
Well, it certainly does. It was in the International Women's Year Convention in Houston in 1977 where the feminist organizations and the feminist leaders joined forces and locked arms with the lesbians. And that was a very significant effect. And they passed their resolution supporting the entire gay rights agenda. And if you listen to all of them, whether you're talking about Steinem, Friedan, Smeal, Ireland, Abzug, all the rest of them, they all talk in enthusiastic support of the entire gay rights agenda, which, of course, includes same-sex marriage licenses. It includes adoptions, any type of raising children in their strange relationships, everything they want. Probably affirmative action for them, too.
Ruth is calling from St. Louis. Ruth, welcome to Issues, Etc. Hello, Ruth.
Hi. Hi, I'm commenting on a segment that you had earlier about mothers staying home with their children. And I have to just make a comment that I can truly say that I was happy that I stayed home with my children, even though we had a very meager existence. And in order to be with my children, I took in ironing, sewing, and babysitting. My boys loved the children the other mothers brought to me to babysit. They all loved being together, and most of the children I babysat were later in their classes with them. However, I have to say that having babysat so many children as I did over the years, probably 25 different children that I've babysat over periods of years when they were still very, very young, before they were in first and second grade, all the way up until that, I could not help but notice how much the children missed their mothers. And with that, what I would consider a very unique period of time in a young child's life for bonding, and an early childhood experience I personally would in no way want to miss. And there were many times I would even see these little kids, they would come to me and cry and hang on me, and it was very evident to me that they were missing being with their mothers. That is something I just couldn't bear doing to my own kids or seeing my own kids going through this experience, mainly because I adopted my two boys, and I wanted to be with them so very, very much. And that's something that I did not wish to give up in any way, shape, or form, even though I did without many things at many different times. I'm talking about utilities, even.
Ruth, thank you very much for sharing that experience with us. Two things strike me about this, Phyllis. First of all, it strikes me that the classic feminist would say that what Ruth did was degrade herself rather than exalt herself in her motherhood, because she didn't pursue the career. And it also strikes me that she has seen firsthand what it is when mothers leave their children to work.
That was a beautiful statement from Ruth, and I thank her for calling in. And most of us who've taken care of our children, I had three in diapers at one time, and those years passed very rapidly. And now I don't want to put down all working mothers, because I don't think it's the attitude toward life that the feminist movement does toward women, for women, and it just produces a bad attitude, a bitter attitude. They're not happy whatever they're doing.
Phyllis Schlafly is our guest. We're talking about feminism. She is founder and president of Eagle Forum. You can check out the website for Eagle Forum by going to our Issues Etc. website. That's issuesetc.org. In fact, and if you click on the What's New section there, you're going to find a direct link to Issues Etc. It's the What's New section at our website, issuesetc.org. When we come back from this break, we're going to be discussing a little bit some of the things we didn't discuss in the last hour, in particular women in combat. That's another issue that Phyllis Schlafly took on when it was still just on the horizon. You say, well, whatever happened to women in combat? Well, folks, sad to say, a lot has happened. Sad to say that there is a social experiment going on in the branches of our military service having to do with the feminist agenda. And we'll also talk about the elitist nature of feminism and something she mentioned in the last hour that caught my ear. Men, after the sexual revolution that was supposed to liberate women, who were really liberated by that in the worst sense of the term? Women or men? Are men freer now to Tomcat, to Alley Cat, than they ever were before? The problem was they wouldn't take responsibility for the children that they were conceiving. Is that any better now that we have abortion and the end of the sexual revolution? We'll be right back talking more with Phyllis Schlafly. When a Christian confesses his sins and hears the words of Christ's forgiveness, is that a Roman Catholic practice? What's the difference between conflict resolution and Christian reconciliation? You'll find answers to these questions in our new Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March, Confession and Forgiveness by Ted Kober of Peacemaker Ministries. Call Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours at 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040. Ask to receive our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March, Confession and Forgiveness. You can also order the book online. Go to our website at issuesetc.org, click on the What's New section, and you'll find a link to Concordia Publishing House. Call 1-800-325-3040 for our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March, Confession and Forgiveness. 1-800-325-3040.
The radio voice of the Lutheran faith for the 21st century. You're listening to Issues Etc.
God isn't finished teaching. Are you just too sinful to receive the Lord's Supper? I'm Pastor Todd Wilkin. Today we continue the question, who should receive the Lord's Supper? A common misunderstanding about the Lord's Supper is that in order to be worthy to receive it, one has to be free of sin. Well, if I had to be free from sin before I took the Lord's Supper, could I ever take it? And who would need the Lord's Supper if he were free from sin? Your sin shouldn't keep you from going to the Lord's Supper. It is, in fact, the very reason you should go. The more sinful you are, the more you need Jesus' body and blood. This holy meal is for sinners, and for sinners only. After all, what does Jesus promise in this supper? He promises forgiveness, right? Well, who needs forgiveness? None other than sinners like me and you. Everyone who eats and drinks with Jesus declares himself to be a sinner in need of forgiveness. Sinner, don't let your sin keep you away from the Lord's table. Sinner, take and eat his body. Take and drink his blood. It is for your forgiveness.
International human rights attorney and law professor Dr. John Warwick Montgomery on why he joined the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod.
I went to Cornell University as a pagan undergraduate. At Cornell, I was converted to biblical Christianity through evangelical witness. Then, before joining a church, I compared the various major doctrinal statements with the Greek New Testament. Amazingly, the Lutheran confessions fitted Scripture exactly, and it was a theology which centered everything on the cross of Christ. The Missouri Synod, with all its human weaknesses, remains the only mainline church which consistently takes a serious view of historic Christian doctrine.
If you want to learn more about the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, call our Issues Etc. resource line at 1-800-737-0172 and ask to receive a free pamphlet called What About the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod? 1-800-737-0172. 1-800-737-0172.
Issues Etc. is looking for one member from each Lutheran Church Missouri Synod congregation to become our official lay representative. Responsibilities simply involve promotion of Issues Etc. in your local church. Now, if you're interested, leave your name, phone number, and mailing address, and your congregation's name, city and state, on our automated resource line, 1-800-737-0172, or email us at issuesetc@kfuo.org. Next week on Issues Etc., we're going to discuss the Word of God with Dr. Ken Sherb of Zion Lutheran Church in Moberly, Missouri. Is the main point of the Bible to teach us how to live a good life, or is there something more important in the Bible for us to know? Are there lots of mistakes in the Bible, as some say? Is the New Testament more important to us today than the Old Testament? We'll answer all these questions next week on Issues Etc., with Dr. Ken Sherb. Now, if you'd like to know what we'll be discussing for the rest of March and all of April on Issues Etc., go to our website, issuesetc.org. There you'll find a list of topics and guests for the weeks ahead. While you're there at our website, issuesetc.org, please be sure to read several articles on the issue of feminism written by our guest in this hour, Phyllis Schlafly, and another Issues Etc. regular and Spence Publishing author, Carolyn Gralia. The website address again, issuesetc.org. Feminism is the topic. Our guest, Phyllis Schlafly, founder and president of Eagle Forum and author and editor of 20 books, including her latest Feminist Fantasies. If you'd like to join us with a question or a comment in the next 25 minutes, 1-800-730-2727. We also have that in-studio email address, and we'll be taking some email here in just a second. issuesetc@kfuo.org. The best calls and emails in the next 25 minutes of the program will receive a free copy of Phyllis Schlafly's new book, Feminist Fantasies. 1-800-730-2727. 1-800-730-2727. issuesetc@kfuo.org. That's the email address. And we have a listener who has written us via email and asks the following question. Could you ask Mrs. Schlafly to comment on how feminism has affected men's opportunities and satisfaction in the workplace? Your answer, Phyllis.
Yes, I've had lots of complaints from women whose husbands have been told, don't expect a promotion anytime soon because we have to give the job to a woman. And this is what when the Equal Employment Law was passed, liberal Senator Hubert Humphrey said this will never bring quotas. He said, if it brings quotas, I will eat the paper the law is written on. But he died before it got to quotas. But that's what it is. It is very difficult for the man supporting his family to get promotions and raises because so many of them have to give their quota to women, and that is very unfortunate.
Another listener asks for a list of good books, a short list of good books on feminism, pro and con. Where would you direct this listener's attention, Phyllis?
Well, that's tough because I don't think there's any other book like mine. I had one 20 years ago, but it's out of print now. You mentioned Carolyn Graglia's book, Domestic Tranquility. It's quite good. She documents completely how the feminist movement made the full-time homemaker their absolute target. They were determined to get rid of her, to make it impossible for her to live in on one income, and just economically impossible, and also to look down on her socially, and to make her believe that she was not really worth anything because she wasn't getting paid a salary. And so that's a very good book. There are not really very many books out there. Most people really don't dare to tell you that the feminist movement has been a destructive influence in our society. They just want to pick around the edges. I might mention Dr. Dobson has a new book on boys, which is important. One of the aspects of the feminist movement is a war on boys in the schools. Do you know that it's a new trend in public schools to eliminate recess and to build some new schools without playgrounds? Now, this is a direct attack on little boys. We all know little boys have to get out on the playground and wrestle with each other and run around so they can come back in and learn something. And what the feminists are trying to do is to make little boys behave like little girls. And it isn't going to work because little boys can't sit still in the elementary grade without that recess break. And when they get obstreperous because they don't want to be like little girls, then they give them Ritalin.
Would you list, for those who are not familiar with kind of the foundational books, pro-feminism, so people can see for themselves or read for themselves the books that gave spark to or are giving spark to feminism, where would they look, one or two books, pro-feminism books, where they can see what we're really talking about here for themselves?
Well, Simone de Beauvoir's book, The Second Sex, Betty Friedan's book, The Feminine Mystique, Gloria Steinem has a couple of books. You just go to any library. There are just dozens or hundreds of them there. And then try to find one on the other side.
Linda writes us and says this, I suspect there are as many definitions for the term feminism as there are listeners to your broadcast. So would Mrs. Schlafly provide her definition of the term of feminism?
When I use the term feminism, I use it as it is used by their leaders, that is, Friedan, Steinem, Abzug, Ginsburg, and all the rest of them, and it means the support of the Equal Rights Amendment, which means they are working for a gender-neutral society. It means abortion on demand, paid for by the taxpayers. It means the entire gay rights agenda, including same-sex marriages and adoptions and affirmative action and all the rest, universal daycare to take care of little children as a middle-class entitlement, and feminizing the military.
Another listener asks, to what extent is the modern trend among women of assuming traditional masculine roles and qualities encouraged by some voices in feminism, an attack on God's natural order? Surely when God created them male and female, he intended certain functions and qualities for each sex with the overall harmony of his creation in mind. I see modern society basically saying that everyone should be masculine with such characteristics as assertiveness, career ambition, competitiveness, etc., including women. Could this be contributing to some of the moral confusion and familial marital problems so prevalent today?
Well, of course. The questioner's got it absolutely right. And it is an attack on God's design for the human race. Obviously, he made us in two different kinds. And what the feminists are trying to do is to remedy what they think is his mistake and make us all the same and pretend that there are no differences. The caller is absolutely right. There was one feminist who said on the Phil Donahue show one time, we are becoming the men we once wanted to marry. And but most women don't want to do that. However, they're getting this steady drumbeat of feminist propaganda on the media all the time. And that's what I bring out so well in my book, Feminist Fantasies, how the feminist line comes out on the network shows, in the movies, in television, in radio, in music, in art, in their legislative proposals, in their litigation, and in the schools and colleges. And it's all out there in all those places, and you need to recognize it and make sure that you don't give in to it.
Another listener asks this: how can individuals resist conforming to feminist social engineering? Could old-fashioned manners play a small role in restoring our genders?
Well, yes. Yes. It is nice to be around people who are polite, and the feminists really don't have good manners. Worse than that, many of them have use a lot of obscenities in their speaking, and you don't see that on television because they don't do it on television. But in their personal life, their language is really filthy. A lot of them, and what's the matter with being polite and gracious? But they're not, and a lot of it comes from their attitude toward life. It's a belligerent attitude. And that doesn't help you no matter who you are.
You know, Phyllis, I've got an 11-year-old daughter, and one of the things I'm trying to do to kind of fortify her against the feminist influence is to subtly teach her what she should expect from men, and that she ought to expect a man to show her deference. She ought to expect a man to be somewhat chivalrous. She ought to expect a man to open the door, to protect her. I'm trying to show her this by the way that I treat her as her father as well, so that, God willing, she will expect the same from future boyfriends, husbands, and co-workers and colleagues. Is it a good word?
You're absolutely right, Todd. And, of course, we all know that there are millions of boys growing up without fathers in the home, and how unfortunate that is. But it is almost as unfortunate for the daughters, because the daughters need to see, to have the role model of a father who is good to them, and they need to see the way he treats her mother, and so that she can have an image of a fine man and ultimately be able to build a fine life of her own.
One other question from a listener. Rachel writes this: if I support the equality of women and support women's endeavors in my home and in the workplace, but I don't want to be referred to as a feminist because I don't associate myself with abortion and the other radical agendas, then what do I call myself? About a minute to answer.
Oh, you're a woman. And I hope a lady, too. And that's very easy. You don't call yourself a feminist. You don't want to associate with those people. And you can also call yourself a member of Eagle Forum. We'd be happy to have you join with us. And we work to lobby for good policies and good regulations at the state level and also at the national level. And I think if you read my book, Feminist Fantasies, you're going to get a very good understanding of what's out there and the attacks on our culture, on our religion, on our families, on motherhood, and then you'll have the answers for all of these questions.
Well, there you go, Rachel. Call yourself a woman, and you know what? You shouldn't be ashamed to call yourself a woman. That's a good thing to be. Phyllis Schlafly is our guest. We're talking about feminism. You know, you don't have to call yourself a feminist in order to boost yourself up. Being a woman is good enough. Phyllis Schlafly has written this book called Feminist Fantasies. You can have it for your very own by calling the publisher 1-888-SPEN-PUB. That's 1-888-SPEN-PUB. It's Spence Publishing. They have a website as well, spencepublishing.com. Now, if you've been trying to call but have been getting a busy signal, we have some open phone lines, and you can call during this break when we come back. 10 more minutes left with Phyllis Schlafly. Talking about feminism, our number, 1-800-730-2727, 1-800-730-2727.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
If you enjoy listening to Issues Etc. on the weekends, did you know that you can listen to 12 new hours of Issues Etc. each week on the Internet? All you have to do is go to our website, issuesetc.org, click the worldwide KFUO logo, and there you can listen to Issues Etc. 24/7, including 12 new programs weekly. The website address again, issuesetc.org.
Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. However, we are not funded by the church body. We're also not affiliated with Lutheran Hour Ministries or the Lutheran Layman's League. Issues Etc. is supported by listeners like you. Please help support this worldwide outreach by making a gift this week. Our address, Issues Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Thanks for your prayerful consideration. If you'd like to receive a complimentary copy of our Issues Etc. journal, or if you'd like to purchase a cassette copy of this two-hour broadcast with Phyllis Schlafly on feminism for a cost of $10, or if you'd like to make a special Lenten donation to Issues Etc., you can do all of that by calling our resource line at 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. You can also write us at Issues Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Now, for any size gift to Issues Etc. this spring, we'll send you our interviews with Dr. Robert Kolb on the humiliation of Christ and Dr. John Warwick Montgomery on answering objections to the bodily resurrection of Christ. For a gift of $50, we'll send you these two shows and our Issues Etc. book of the month for March called Confession and Forgiveness. For a contribution of $100, we'll mail you our seven-part series with Pastor Tom Baker on a theology of glory versus a theology of the cross. And for a gift of $250 or more to Issues Etc. during this spring, we'll send you each and every one of these premiums and Dr. Paul Meyer's book called The Very First Easter. The phone number, 1-800-737-0172, the mailing address, Issues Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Please prayerfully consider supporting Issues Etc. and making a donation during the season of Lent. We are listener-supported, 1-800-737-0172, or Issues Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. I wanted to take up a few of the issues that we didn't have time for in the first hour, Phyllis. The one being something with which you have a long history, and that is your opposition to women in combat and the social engineering in our branches of the military. Tell us about that.
The feminists who are working for a gender-neutral society recognize the military as the cutting edge, because that's where men are men, and we need macho men to go out and kill the bad guys. And so they have made a special drive. They look upon the military not as a force of men to defend our country in battle, but simply as an opportunity for social promotion and advancement. And they really want a women assigned to all the jobs. And during the Clinton administration, they got women assigned to more and more of what was called combat support or combat related, so that the definition of combat gets narrower all the time. However, they are not in the combat infantry, and they are not on submarines, and I don't believe they should be. I don't think they should be in as many combat related jobs as they now are, because we know they cannot do the work that the men can do. I read an article in Stars and Stripes, the Army magazine, last week, in which it said the average pack that the guys are carrying over there is 120 pounds. And I just don't think there are any women who can walk through that sand over there carrying a pack of 120 pounds.
For me, it's the basic question of whether or not I want. It's not a matter of physical ability, because who knows, there may be a woman out there who can carry the 120 pound pack. I don't know. But for me, it's the issue of whether or not I want my sister, my daughters, my granddaughters, my the lady who lives next door to me to be called to serve my country in that capacity or to give their life for it. It seems unseemly to me.
I think it's contrary to common sense. In the Gulf War, we had tearful pictures of mothers of six-week-old nursing babies who were shipped out. And the Army just said, well, they signed up, so now it's time to go. And I think it's ridiculous. The armies of all our enemies are all male.
There's another serious problem that has to do with, say, the average aircraft carrier. You get 5,000 crewmen aboard an aircraft carrier, and if you have a mix of men and women, we're talking about young men 18, 19 years old, women the same age. It seems a pretty volatile mix.
It's very volatile, and of course, some of them will come back pregnant. In fact, 10% of the women at any one time are pregnant, and then the Army has to deal with that. And if they're out on the ship, maybe they have to try to bring them back. They have to provide daycare, and this is not what the Army should be about.
You mentioned before the elitist nature of the feminist movement. Describe that for us. Many people would say, well, it doesn't seem elitist. It seems like they're trying to take the average woman out of an oppressive situation and lift her up to a higher level.
Well, the average woman is not oppressed. The average woman is getting along very well, thank you. And if you want to see how women have been liberated in this country, they've been really liberated by electricity and by the wonderful inventions. When I got married, all I wanted in the world was a dryer to hang up my diapers, to dry my diapers so I didn't have to hang them up on the line. And now, of course, we have not only have dryers, we have paper diapers, and all these wonderful conveniences in the home that have made home life so pleasant. And so the feminists just give women the wrong attitude toward life.
Another listener emails us with this question, Larry in North Carolina. What part, if any, did Margaret Sanger and her racist birth control views play in modern abortion and feminism?
Well, she was the founder of Planned Parenthood, and they're the biggest abortion provider in this country. And yes, she was deep into the eugenics movement. She really wanted abortion so that they could get rid of the undesirables in this country. And that eugenics movement is very much discredited now. So I think that the Planned Parenthood and the feminists ought to be embarrassed about claiming her as one of their leaders and early sponsors.
You have written in your book, Feminist Fantasies, Phyllis, that we should not expect the feminist movement to quietly go away. What do you mean?
Well, they've got jobs. And it's true they're not growing because most of them are not having children. But at the same time, they've got nice jobs in government, and in the media, and in academia. And then they are able to work for their agenda on our money. And so they've had a big impact in this country. All you have to do is see the growing strength of the gay rights movement. That's part of it. The abortion movement, which has been able to... The whole fight over the confirmation of George Bush's nominees to the Supreme Court is carried on because of the abortion lobby and all the money they raised in the last election. Emily's List, which is the biggest political action committee in the country, had over $20 million to put into the election last November. That's more than twice as much as the second largest political action committee. And now they're, of course, they didn't elect most of their candidates. This country is moving pro-life. But the money talks, and that's why you find the liberals and the pro-abortionists in the Senate are determined to defeat any nominee for the court who might possibly ever turn out to be pro-life.
Finally, with only a minute to answer in this conversation, you have fought feminism for decades. Do you feel somewhat vindicated now that the evidence of history and of modern history is proving you right with regard to feminism?
Yes, I certainly do. The American people were wise in rejecting the Equal Rights Amendment. We were able to defeat that in a 10-year battle. I think the country is moving pro-life, and even those who've had abortions have realized that wasn't the way to go, a lot of them. So it's steady. We had great victories in the last election, the November election. We elected wonderful pro-lifers and increased their numbers in both the Senate and the House. And I speak a lot on college campuses. I think we're getting great groups of girls who have their heads screwed on right, and they are rejecting feminism. So I'm very optimistic, and I feel very vindicated. And every week I meet some woman who said, I demonstrated against you 20 years ago, but you were right, and I'm glad you had held the line.
Phyllis, thank you very much for being our guest on Issues, Etc.
Thank you, Todd, and tell people again how to get my new book, Feminist Fantasies.
Phyllis Schlafly is founder and president of Eagle Forum. She's author and editor of 20 books, including her latest called Feminist Fantasies. You can get it from the publisher by calling toll-free at Spence Publishing, 1-888-SPENPUB. It's 1-888-SPENPUB. I will say that Spence Publishing does not produce bad books, period, and this is one of the good books that they produce. 1-888-SPENPUB, or go to their website, SpencePublishing.com. That's SpencePublishing.com. If you're one of those women sitting out there and you kind of missed out on the feminist movement and you didn't get a career, you just got married and had kids, and you may, after the kids are getting a little older, say to yourself, what have I missed? What opportunity did I miss? What could have been in my life had I taken the feminist advice and left kids for later, or maybe never, and not gotten married and pursued my career? You're sitting there with your family around you wondering what you might have missed. After the end of this conversation, you should be able to say to yourself, and I should say to you, you haven't missed a thing. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues, Etc.
Listen to Pastor Todd Wilkin weekly on Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues, Etc. to continue. Our mailing address, Issues, Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Or you can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. Visit us this week on the World Wide Web. Our website address, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org. Issues, Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.